Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. You know, some years ago, I had the great pleasure of reading the 5 novels that together consist in the complete Patrick Melrose novels. They've been available for some time as one book, but most recently, they turned into a 5-part series on Showtime, I believe.
Showtime, yes.
Yes. And much to my surprise, I would not have thought that these books could be adapted, let alone adapted to television. But it is true that a 5-part series fits the 5 novels very well. The first 2 novels present a world that's as bad as it gets. A sexually abused child, a smack-addicted grown-up, and then the last 3 novels begin with a book called Some Hope, and they do offer some hope. Mother's milk is not necessarily the milk of human kindness, and yet at last both of the parents are dead, and Patrick Melrose is left to face a world, his world, if not the world. And the actor, who I hadn't seen before, Benedict Cumberbatch, plays Patrick Melrose. He plays him to a T. Now, I've got the author, Edward St. Aubyn, here with me. He's here on this wonderful occasion. The limited series has been nominated for 5 Emmys, among them for limited series and for the star of the series. Wow, what are the other 3?
It's Best Director, Best Actor, Best Limited Series, Best Screenplay, and Best Casting. So there are 5.
The best of the best, as good as it could be, yes?
Yes, it's thrilling, yeah.
This is what one wants. Now, out of fear, I've rarely spoken to writers whose work has been adapted, and yet you seem to be perhaps one of the luckiest writers alive in that this really is a wonderful adaptation, or am I putting my foot in my mouth?
No, you're absolutely right. I feel I am the luckiest writer to have had such a brilliant series made out of my books. And I think they're works of art in their own right. The fact that each episode has its own tone, its own color, its own quality is something very special. Without having any guest directors, Edward Berger directed all of them. And yet he follows the basic arc of the books, which is a story of someone very gradually and with great difficulty liberating himself from the chains of a traumatic childhood and its consequences.
When we first spoke some years ago, I think it's 4 years ago, you spoke of the books as being semi-autobiographical. Do you regret that? Do you wish to correct that? Is that the line you take on them?
I don't know the exact proportions. I suppose semi will have to do. I mean, it's absurd to think that they're autobiographical in any literal sense. You know, all but Mother's Milk are set on one day, and so the compression of of 10 years of childhood or 12 years of addiction into a single day. And also, Patrick is 5 years old in Nevermind, and I wasn't my parents' Boswell, you know, sitting in the corner of the dining room faithfully recording the conversation that was going on. I made the whole thing up, but it was made up from an atmosphere that I remember and that I know very well. And so there's a lot of invention. There are characters like Nicholas Pratt, and who's entirely invented. Although lots of people have claimed either to be Nicholas Pratt or to know exactly who he's based on. In fact, an invention of mine.
Well, I would think that many people would want to duck under a table rather than being identified in this way. He's a friend of the father,
yes.
He is a competitor as a gossip and a marauding insulter. He has nothing good to say about anyone and prefers not to say nothing. He's very brilliantly done. It's a spectacular monologue. I think when you were here, you read part of it on the show, and those people who want to go to kcrw.com/bookworm can hear Edward St. Aubyn reading from that monologue. The great thing about these books is that they are ideal. Their ear for horrific comedy is top in our time, and you have to go back to Evelyn Waugh to find something remotely similar. And unlike Waugh, who wants to court the favor of some of his aristocratic characters, you're prepared to watch the whole deck fly into thin air. This is a terrible world of privilege. And the only thing the author can lay claim to is devastatingly witty ability to capture the noises that the privileged make when insulting what they take to be their inferiors.
But I think in these books, there's something very specific about the way it's done, and that it's probably a kind of attitude which is waning, you know, in England. The universal fascination with money and celebrity has...
And with the royals, I hope, too.
And with the royals has slightly flooded the old world of genealogical snobbery.
One of the astonishments is that Princess Margaret appears at a wedding party. Do I have it right?
She appears at a birthday party.
Birthday party. That's right.
Of Sonny Gravesend's, yes.
And she's as horrible as any of them. In fact, she's the princess of all of the evil-speaking, evil-intended people. She's in the TV show that features her, evil to a child. Shouldn't that child be in bed? She says, with great disdain and annoyance. And then, you see, the complete Patrick Melrose novels amount to the complete Patrick Melrose, and he's an assemblage of these horrors that have been directed at him, beginning with his father. And he's only starting to unstitch the terrors, because many things in which he does not believe, what are the things in which he does not believe? Rehabilitation, consolation, all these things turn out to be possible bit by slight bit. And at the very end of the book, we see him going to a place where he belongs with his wife and his children, whom he's already left earlier that evening. They're not expecting him. He comes to an understanding of where he belongs and allows himself to go there. Now, I think that that's an astonishing conclusion to this particular set of novels. Was it hard for you to take it there?
It was. I had no idea how to end this series. And I knew that the ending had to be realistic and therefore that it was going to be muted and hard won rather than based on circumstantial merriment of some kind. But one of the things that point to a difference between film and a novel, you can't film the movement of someone's mind, but a great actor can certainly film a mentality with a gesture and an expression and so forth, but not the movement and the internal arguments that we have.
Well, we have a great actor here. It's Benedict Cumberbatch. He played Alan Turing, I believe.
And he does, I think he does an extraordinarily brilliant performance in Patrick Melrose. He has such a range of emotions to cover and such a range of ages. He has to be a junkie, a bereaved son, a father, a husband.
Now, were you involved in the making of this series? Were you there?
I was a consultant, which is a flexible role. It has no official power. I had no veto. But I was often there during the shooting, and I saw the final script, and I made suggestions, and I spoke to all of the main actors, and So yes, I was involved, but not in charge.
I'm talking to Edward St. Aubyn, the author of the 5 Patrick Melrose novels, Nevermind, Bad News, Some Hope, Mother's Milk, At Last, now all available in one volume from Picador. Did it frighten you to see an actor that good that he could?
I'm told that the back of my head looks very like the back of his head, although I'm not in a position to verify that. he's embodying a character that I created rather than impersonating the author. But he's absolutely got the whole psychological range of Patrick's behaviours, from being funny to being hysterical, angry, the whole range, with extraordinary precision. And it's a brilliant tour de force.
It is, in part because throughout the book, Patrick is not only talking to others, he's talking to himself. Mm. He's doing impersonations of people like himself, people from movies who are somewhat like him, other addicts, other people at recovery meetings. He can imitate anyone. It's one of his gifts, because he's been teased so much by particularly his father, but also his father's friends, a whole generation of people whose specialty is insinuating impersonation. And here is this actor doing not just himself, but his surroundings and the people around him and what's influenced by him. And it's kind of a small miracle watching him do this.
There's a chapter in the second book which becomes the first episode. There's a reversal of the order, which I think is very important structurally, and in which Patrick can speak in any voice except his own, and he compulsively mimics about 30 to 40 different people. And all of these sub-personalities are in competition for taking over his psyche. And it's really a picture of someone who's on the very brink of schizophrenia. If he heard these voices with full credulity, he would be schizophrenic. But just that tiny margin of creativity and control, although the impersonations are completely compulsive, he can't stop them. Nevertheless, he's speaking them. It's really about acting, saving someone's sanity from being completely taken over into full psychosis. And so for an actor, it's a particularly interesting task to be saving your sanity by acting. And I think Benedict does the tension of that and flickering from one character to another very, very brilliantly.
In some sense, has he rescued you from being perceived as the character in this novel?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, for years now, for over 20 years, people have been asking me if I'm Patrick Melrose, and now I can say, No, it's Benedict Cumberbatch. It's Patrick Melrose, and it's a wonderful to have handed over that burden to someone else.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Edward St. Aubin about the complete Patrick Melrose novels, which have been adapted into a limited series of 5 parts. But we'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. 2 FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Edward St. Aubin about the complete Patrick Melrose novels, a collection of 5 hilarious and harrowing novels about the English upper-class life of Patrick Melrose, who is, yes, upper class, but also an addict, an alcoholic, a bereft and hard hit person who's having trouble imagining who he might be in the aftermath of all of this sickness and attack. This is one of the rare books in which a man hearing that his father has died starts to laugh and needs to. Mm. Tell me, it's been on television in America and England both. Mm. What has been the effect on the readership of the novels?
It's helped to bring new readers to the books, and I'm very grateful for that. And speaking personally, the experience has been quite strange in that I spent 22 years writing these books. They were fully under my control. I released them very slowly, one by one. Writing each one gave me insights into what I wanted to write next. And then suddenly I was hit by a 5-hour audiovisual freight train, you know, which was was broadcast in the course of 5 weeks, and that drowning people are supposed to see their life flash before their eyes, and in a sense, I have seen my life flash before my eyes without the inconvenience of having to drown. And so it was a very odd experience. And while it was being made, I kept saying that it was a double sublimation. It was a work of art based on a work of art and so forth, all of which was true. But it didn't prepare me for the ferocity of seeing it as a film. I think films address our senses directly in a way that books don't. With a book, you construct a picture in your imagination from the words on the page, which is an entirely different experience.
A different experience, and yet, near to the beginning of the series, we hear the sentence that occurs also, I believe, in Nevermind. Maybe it's in Bad News. It's hard because the first and second have been reversed in order in the TV series. But it's a Beckett sentence, the sun having no alternative shone on the nothing new, which I believe is the first sentence of Murphy.
Exactly.
And throughout these novels, the books that the author would have read are respected, sometimes genuflected to, and in the TV series, briefly, Patrick Melrose becomes Peter O'Toole in Lawrence of Arabia. I think it's We Have Taken Aqaba.
Yes, that's right.
And the feeling when watching television of watching an elusive, a multi-elusive series, it seems to me, now I have to confess I don't watch a lot of television, but I watch it when people tell me to. And the world in which illusion is carried on to something other than other TV shows, it seems to me, to my limited knowledge, very rare on television. And what we have in this Patrick Melrose is a Patrick Melrose on television who's watched television, seen movies, read novels, met his friends' parents, his friends' parents' friends, and is capable of imitating any of them because he lives in a generation in which that form of imitation has become not just an art form, but a form of pleasantry. The actors are in cahoots with one another. They know England. They know what England is like, although the mother is played by an American actress, Jennifer Jason Leigh. She's wonderful.
She's wonderful, absolutely.
Oh, my. She can barely lift one of her eyes, and you get the feeling that she's dreaming behind one eye and seeing with the other, and that the combination is unbearable to her.
Yes. What a good way of putting it, yes.
This is, as we see her, a woman who, as it said in the last volume of the series, has been married to a sadist and a pedophile. And now she knows it. She knows it. It's the end of her life. She's done everything she can to give away her money, her background, her past, to find some way of being kind. And all she finds are ways of being stupid. Mm. Stupid to the people she loves. And stupider when it comes to her definition of what it would be to be good in the world. Now, given the fact, at least by my lights, we're asking that question right now. What would it mean to be good in the world? What form of rescue could we possibly find for the malfeasances that are everywhere around us? Well, you beat us to the question.
Well, it certainly Eleanor is not held up as an example of what it is to be good, but the ambition to seem good being the source of an enormous amount of destructiveness. I think that that telling the truth is probably a good start in the project of being good, but as well, Eleanor's
telling the truth, knowing what the truth is,
yes,
defining the truth.
Finding the truth and then communicating it. And that is not a deep sea dive that Eleanor's prepared to go on, or that anyone's prepared to go on, really, except Patrick, who believes that he will be liberated by finding the truth and by telling it.
You've said that you are not haunted by seeing this book enacted, but that you are re-exorcised. I wondered if you would explain what you mean by that.
Well, I've said both in a way. I felt that the films had an extraordinarily strong impact on me because of their concentration and their power. And I think they're brilliantly directed and acted and very beautiful. And they do some things which books can't do. For instance, when Patrick's with his father's friends after his father's died, and he's telling them about a hunting expedition in which his father shot one of the hunters in the head because he was screaming as a result of having contracted rabies. In the film, you can move between Patrick telling that story to his father's friends and young Patrick being told the story by his father. That's something that film can do that books can't do. Each medium has its virtues and its powers, and I feel that that these films are very, very powerful. But at the same time, yes, it is in a sense. They're moving yet further away from lived experience. You know, they are based on books, and the books are based on reflection about lived experience.
I've been talking with Edward St. Aubin, one of the luckiest writers alive, in that his books, the complete Patrick Melrose novels, have been well adapted to a limited 5-part series. The books are all now published in one volume by Picador. The programs have been seen on Showtime. Thank you, Teddy, for joining me.
Thank you very much, Michael.
You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, wherever else you get your podcasts, and you can listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer and assistant, Sean Sullivan. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this, bookworm. Read this, read that, read this. I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Patrick DeWitt is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.